glad you're here. Fellowship sweeter, knowing you're near. It's so good to see you. I hope that it's fair. Everyone loves you.
Welcome to Mark and Friends. I'm your host, Donna Leland. And today we meet the author of a book called A Resilient Warrior. And this is the story of his son, Brandon, who walked through a very deep and dark valley of the shadow of death, but with so many moments where God met them in their challenge. Thank you so much, Ted, for joining us on Mark and Friends.
Well, you're welcome. I'm glad to be here.
Well, let's start in with the story of Brandon. And how did that happen? I mean, he was just a healthy guy going about his life, enjoying being a new airplane pilot, and then something happened.
Yes, he started getting some headaches the summer of 2020, and the headaches kept getting closer together, you know, mm-hmm. 6 weeks, then 4 weeks. 2 weeks, and it got to such a bad point on August 18th of 2020. His fiance rushed him into the ER, and they diagnosed him with a golf ball sized brain cyst in mm-hmm. the back of his brain. The neurosurgeon wasn't sure really how to approach it, because normally these things don't cause the distress that he was under. So he was just going to want to keep an eye on it for like 3 months or so. And so we got the second opinion with Mayo Clinic, and they were going to definitely need surgery to relieve the pressure. It'll make a big difference, but we can't get you in for 4 weeks. Well, September 7th was when we were there. So it wouldn't have been until October they could get us in. So we're like, okay, that's fine. Brand said he'll just have to tough it out. Well, on September 15th, the pressure was so immense that he almost died. Abby had to call the ambulance, and they picked him up, rushed him in, and it was a near-death situation. When we got there, he was flailing each way and vomiting, and it was just horrific to see. And they had to do emergency surgery, and they did save his life, which was great. Within an hour after surgery, he's sitting up in the ICU room, wide awake, goofing around. He's acting like he was Spider-Man with IV lines coming off of his wrists. And he also told Abby that they were going to get married 11 days later on September 26th. Sure enough, they released him 2 days later. Things are going great. He's just healing up so fast from this. It was very unusual. But before they released him, they only allowed two people in the ICU room at a time. So I let my wife go up there, and I'd wait in the lobby. After surgery, the next day, I think it was, this male nurse stopped by while I was sitting there on my computer working, and he was wanting to find out about Brandon's condition. And I told him how well he was doing, and he said, "That's miraculous in itself." He says, "Usually when we see somebody in that condition, they end up brain dead." Mm. And it was just amazing when I heard that. I'll never forget that reaction he had. So anyway, Brandon was successful with his surgery, and he moves on, and they come back here to get married in Lincoln Memorial Gardens at the Lincoln Council Ring. And he showed up on Friday night. The wedding was going to be Saturday. This is during COVID, so we couldn't have it at a church like we always wanted to and have a big reception. So my second son ended up becoming a pastor and marrying them. But we noticed that he was leaking some fluid out of the back of his neck the night before, and we just thought it was pus coming out of a wound.
Yeah.
But it ended up to be that was brain fluid that was escaping and leaking through the patch. Oh. The synthetic patch that the doctor used was failing. And also, he didn't put the skull piece back on, like a 1-inch diameter piece of skull. He didn't replace that. This led to many complications later. The next week, after the wedding, Brandon goes back home. Does normal stuff, you know. It wasn't really affecting him right away, but then within a week or so, it got worse and worse. So he had to go in, and then they would stitch him up and try to stop that fluid from coming back out. We went out there and we stayed with him for 3 weeks and tried to figure out how to avoid that leak from getting worse. And we found out that if we were to sit him in a lazy boy, to let him sleep in a lazy boy at about a, 30-degree angle or more, it would prevent that from leaking. As soon as he would lay in bed, it would just leak out,
wow,
cause a lot of issues. So we were there for about 3 weeks. We thought we had it all figured out. So we came home because October 19th, he was going to go back in and get his last stitches out of his incision, and everything was going to be great. But he wakes up October 19th, the bulge is bigger than ever, and he was leaking more fluid. And so he went back into the hospital, and they readmitted him to try to correct the situation. The doctor decided he thought Brandon had high pressures, that he developed high pressures in his brain somehow, and that he needed to have a shunt installed. The more we looked into it, Brandon would not be able to fly. He was a pilot at the time, and he was flying for Delta and United originally, but then he got this dream job before this all happened. He was a corporate jet pilot for a big company, and he was just loving it, but he ended up losing that job because of this. The doctor wanted to put this shunt in, but we had asked him maybe to just fix the leak instead, because we learned that the patch that he had used had a 56% failure rate.
Oh, and he didn't tell you that ahead of time.
He didn't tell us that ahead of time. It was a synthetic graft where the Mayo Clinic said they were going to use the fasciolata off of his leg. They're going to harvest this material that wraps around your muscle. That's very similar to a duramatter. It's very tough. But he had elected at that time during the emergency surgery to use that synthetic material that ended up failing. So then he called. We asked him to talk to the Mayo Clinic doctor, who was like one of the best surgeons in the world, really. The Mayo Clinic doctor suggested that he also fix the leak with the fasciolata, and the skull was already missing. He couldn't replace that. They scheduled him for surgery for, I think it was a couple days later. But in the meantime, his leg had swelled up about twice the size of normal, and they did a Doppler test and found out that he had blood clots from his ankle,
wow,
to his groin.
Oh.
Entire strands. Yeah, it was incredible.
Oh.
He was in such pain.
Oh.
And later on, we've come to find out, or they came to find out, that it was caused by the heparin that they had been given him. It's a thing called heparin-induced thrombocytopenia. They didn't recognize that till later. But at this point, they're looking at it and they're thinking there could be a possibility of having to amputate the leg from the knee down, because there was three veins that were totally clogged. But they were smart and they put an IVC filter into his vena cava. They went through his neck and put this thing down in his abdomen to prevent clots from breaking off and stroking him out,
yeah,
worse. So October 21st comes along, and they bring him in for the second brain surgery to fix the leak. And Brandon had agreed before going in there that they would insert a lumbar drain to lower the pressure so that the new patch would heal up. But 5 hours into surgery, the doctor calls us into this consult room and tells us that he can't get that lumbar drain in, and he wants to drill through the top of his head and insert a tube that would serve the same purpose. It's called an external ventricular drain. So, you know, not knowing anybody, we're just like, yes, please do what you got to do to save his life and make things right. So he went and did that. An hour after surgery, Brandon wakes up like nothing happened. Go up there to the ICU room, and he's wide awake, talking, asking us how we're doing. We had to tell him that the doctor couldn't get that lumbar drain in. They had to insert a tube on the top of his head, and he feels the top of his head. He's like, I guess that's okay. He says, at least I can sit up and watch football now. If he would have had the lumbar drain in, he would have had to lay on his side back, you know, every 2 hours they have to shift him back and forth, and he couldn't watch TV. So he was always very positive.
Yeah, that's amazing. His attitude was just amazing throughout this.
Yes. Yeah, it was just, it really was. He would thank them for everything they would do.
Mm.
You know, they'd stick his arm, you know, new IVs, you know, all these blood tests, and he would always thank them. Everything looked great that night. Pressures were perfect. The fluid looked crystal clear. Everything was amazing. We felt so good about it, and we're going to put this behind us. However, the next day when I showed up to visit, And now they're only allowing one person in there at this point because something happened with COVID. And so we were switching off people that would go up there. So I was up there, and they asked him if he'd like to feed himself. And he was at a 30-degree angle at that point in his bed, and they raised him up. Definitely wanted to feed himself. He didn't want Dad feeding him. And so they raised him up to a 45-degree angle. The nurses then leave the room, and all of a sudden, Brandon grabs his forehead and his eyes, and I said, "What's wrong?" He says, "I don't feel right." And I looked at that tube, and blood was flowing out of the tube. Now, I ran out to get the nurses. They came back in. They lowered him down to that 30-degree angle, and then it cleared up, and he felt better, and then Dad got to feed him.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, but I was taking pictures of all this to make sure that the neurosurgeon was aware, and because that obviously is not a good sign. He must have nicked a blood vessel on his right side of his brain in the front there on the top. They said they couldn't take the pictures and send to him, but they did call his office, and that office said, as long as the bleeding stopped, it's okay. Brandon and I sat there the whole day watching football and talking and playing games or whatever. But then the next morning, Brandon sent us a picture of a bunch of his IV. He had his arm sticking out. I took a picture of his IV, and there's blood coming out of every port there. And he said that he understood that they gave him some more heparin at 6:30 that morning. We're like, well, the blood, that's a blood thinner, and that would cause that to happen. Well, that made the brain hemorrhage worse.
Oh.
Because now he had a brain hemorrhage starting, and that made it worse. What are we to do? And the doctor said, I can't do anything for him right now. Oh, I can't help him except for bringing platelets in from a blood bank, which would help clot. But he has this heparin-induced thrombocytopenia, so this may not work. So he said, you guys just got to go home, try to get some sleep, and then come back tomorrow. So, of course, we couldn't sleep that night. And we get back up there at 9 o'clock, and the doctor rushes over to us, takes us into this room, and says Brandon had lost his entire left side.
Oh.
And he was unconscious. And now he has to do life-saving brain surgery number 4. And to do this, he had to do it in the ICU room, where he has no guidance like he would in the emergency or in the surgery room or the operating room. And he had to use a hand drill, and this time he has to go through the left side of his brain instead of the right.
A hand drill. That just sounds like it's from...
Basically, when he drilled through the skull, the pressure was so immense that he told us that the blood almost hit the doctor in the face.
Mm.
When he was stapling the tube on the top of Brandon's skull... It's very painful just to get staples in your head. Brandon woke up, and he raised both hands up, which was a great sign that he got that left side back.
Yeah.
And for the first time ever, he cussed at the doctor. Mm. He said, and the doctor said, you know, I know Brandon's going to be okay now because he's never angry. He never has cussed. But this time it's good that he cussed at me. That means he's got some fight in him, you know, still has that fight in him. The doctor, you know, explained to him, and then he walked out of the room, looked back at Brandon, and Brandon gave him a thumbs up, like he was, you know, that's the old Brandon, you know, always positive. Later on, that doctor told us that he discussed this with a lot of the doctors throughout the Midwest, a lot of his peers, and they all agreed that 80% of people would have died just from that event.
Wow.
And the other 20% usually can't walk, talk, or see, and are on a ventilator. And he said all the docs, they could not believe that he wasn't even on a ventilator.
Mm.
So there's something unusual.
Yeah.
You know, with his strength or with divine intervention, as I'm calling it.
Yeah.
At that point, though, my wife's friends kept pushing to get a Caring Bridge website. And previously, before this happened, they were asking Abby if they wanted a Caring Bridge website, and they're so proud that they didn't want to do this, and, you know, we'll be okay. But now at this point, Abby agreed to go ahead and have this Caring Bridge account set up because she understood because Brandon was in such bad condition, he may not survive, and if he did, he wouldn't be able to work. So we started that site up, and then all the prayers started pouring in. Friends, family, people we didn't even know were on there. He ended up having a fifth and sixth brain surgery due to more complications, but it was like clogging of the tubes, so they had to reposition the tubes. So that just had to be done, and eventually they got it, you know, kind of under control. But in the meantime, he developed a brain infection, so they had to put him on some antibiotic for that. Okay, so that was all through October and the first part of November. November 6th, on the night of November 6th, a fellow named Father Aloysius shows up in the ICU room and performs anointing of the sick on Brandon. My wife was in there at the time, and they said prayers together. And the next day, Brandon's leg that was so swollen, and they were talking about cutting off half of it, it shrunk back to normal size. There was no more pain in his leg. His brain fluid started clearing up, and things were, it was like a huge turnaround. I attribute it to that anointing of the sick. It was just too coincidental.
Yeah.
That was total divine intervention from my perspective. And that's one of the things, as a witness to this, this is why I've had to write this book, to show everybody that these things do happen. Miracles do happen. And the closer you are to God, the more you pray to him and ask him for his help, he'll be there. He ended up having one last surgery on November 9th because what had happened from all the blood that he had throughout his brain and the trauma that he had, but the blood had caused all the, you have a lot of orifices, and so it caused a lot of orifices in his brain to clog up. So now he had pressure, you know, there was high pressure. If they took the drain out, he would have high pressure. So they had to put a shunt in him, which is like a pressure valve, a release valve. And this was the final surgery, and it was successful. You know, it worked. He was released from the hospital November 20th after going through therapy, physical and mental therapy. And another miraculous thing, normally when you're laying in bed for 3 or 4 weeks straight, you can't just get up and walk.
True.
It's really hard. They got him up the first time, they got him out of bed to walk. They put a harness on him, and they had a person on either side to hold on to him to keep him up. Well, Abby was taking a video of this from behind, and he asked the people to just let go of him. And he started walking. He walked the whole loop on the ninth floor all by himself, unassisted, which was just miraculous
that
also.
Is. Yeah.
And he went home, and now he's out of work. And the love from people is just amazing when things like this happen. There was people providing, you know, a few $100 that, from Quincy, that they didn't even know. Somehow these people found out about this, and they were providing some money. So it really helped, and it got him through these tough times. Eventually, though, Brandon got tired of just laying around and, you know, moping around, my dad would call it. He wanted to go back to work. So he told his father-in-law, he says, I'm just ready to go back to work. And he says, well, how about if you come work for my mortgage business? In order to do that, everybody has to take a 7-part onboarding test. He scored the highest in the history of the company on that test.
Oh.
Yeah, so to talk about a great sign that he's going to be okay. The funny thing is, and Brandon calls it a sick joke, but the office is located right south of the runway from this airport. So every 30 minutes, an airplane would fly directly overhead, and he would just want to go back flying again. He just, yeah. You know, he never lost that passion for aviation. And God works in mysterious ways. Brandon's father-in-law asked him to get on LinkedIn to try to drum up some business. And lo and behold, he saw an ad for a flight trainer, a simulator trainer up in the Minneapolis area. So they flew him up there for an interview, and he landed the job. He
got
the job. Yep. So they moved on north. They're about 7 and a half, 8 hours from us. But they moved up there and everything started falling into place. Abby became pregnant and they had a little sweet baby girl on October 13th of 2022. She's a true miracle baby.
Yeah.
And they're due to have another baby this November. So yeah, it was a long road, but it all has worked out.
You know, it's just walking through this valley. It just strengthens your faith. There is a God. He cares, and He's with us during these hard times.
That's correct. That's when I started writing this book. I didn't know how it was going to go, and one of the things that I do want people to walk away with when they read it is how important faith is. You get hope knowing that miracles do happen and prayers work. He's alongside you every day in the good times, in the valleys and on the mountains. You know, he's with you. And I like to know everybody to know how important family and friends are. That network is so powerful, and to always be an advocate for other people, family and friends, and just, it really makes a difference if you can advocate for your people.
And it's during these times, yeah, we really do find out who's with us, because they're willing to hear the prayer, hear the cry, hear the story, and walk through it with you, so that they become even more precious, don't they? We're talking with Ted Michael. He is the author of A Resilient Warrior. This is the story of he and his family's unwavering faith, and they watched miraculous power of prayer through the situation with his son, Brandon. Well, thank you so much, Ted. How can people get a hold of your book?
I have a website. It's called aresilientwarrior.org. And you have to type in www first. Otherwise, you'll find a lot of other websites that are similar about soldiers. But yeah, that's the website, and it's in it's on Amazon, for sale at Amazon, Barnes and Noble. Yeah, so
okay,
that's where you can find it.
Well, thanks again for joining us here on Mark and Friends. And thank you, dear listener, for sharing this moment with us. Mark and Friends is a ministry of Great News Media. So glad you found us. And if you ever would like to hear this program again, it's always available in an MP3 format. Hope you have a great day.